Yes, folks, and the podcast this week is brought to you in association with Repack. It's Thursday, the 30th of September. This is the Sodcast. This is episode 9.
Absolute silence as deep in the undergrowth of North County Dublin, we're recording the Sodcast.
Can somebody kill the Ryanair airplane, please?
Welcome to the loudest gardening podcast in the world, the Sodcast, with your host, Peter Donegan.
I have a bumper-packed show for you this week, as always. I have my on-the-blog section, I have my images, I have my links for the podcast. I've got this week's special guest, thank God, says you. It's a couple of minutes less of listening to me. I have this week's oddities, and of course, I have my And Finally section. You know, on the first bit, I don't really have one. I don't really have one, you know, but I did get to thinking, you know, people were asking me, you know, look, Pete, you know, why, you know, aren't you a gardener and you do like a podcast? And I was kind of saying, yeah, you know, look, I'm a yapaholic in my spare time, and I'm a gardener, and I'm lucky and extremely fortunate that my hobby is my job. I really do love what I do for a living. I'm blessed in that sense. But, you know, in my, I suppose, spare time, obviously, you know, my greatest attribute isn't playing golf. I think I've played once, and I think I wrecked the shop. to be honest with you, I think I did. Owen Kennedy and Daryl from Repack, actually, they'll confirm that. I think we wrote off 4 golf buggies and 32 sets of clubs. It wasn't a pretty sight at all. In my on the blog section, I kind of done this in a roundabout way, because the first guest coming up later on is Shauna Coronado, who most of you would know quite well. But rather than have, I suppose, an intro with Shauna, which would kind of take up a bit of time out of the podcast, I thought it was a better idea that we just ran into, you know, what she had to say. I'll give you a taster. I mean, look, it's my first week as well doing the guest. There were some sound recording kind of issues, but I've spoken to Neville Hobson, who's at Jangles, who's another great podcaster based in the UK. And Neville, who I met before, and I'm looking to have a pint with him when he gets back to Dublin soon. Neville kind of said to me, hey, Pete, I've got the thing that'll make you sound super duper again. So when we get to next week, we should be all perfect. But for the moment, we're in stereo, and, you know, it's a 4-minute clip, and you should enjoy it, hopefully. But go take a look if you're interested. The bit behind the scenes of Shauna is also there. I've done 2 plants on the blog this week, which is quite unusual. One of them is Ilex, which is the holly plant, and the other is the clematis. Now, the clematis, as I knew them growing up, used to grow to about 47 foot tall. 47 foot tall is pretty damn tall, isn't it? I would have thought so. So from a low maintenance gardener requesting point of view, it's not really one of the ones that you'd kind of pick. However, I did find 6 that I thought would fit your garden. Now, the only thing I'd say is, look, I put a little note up at the end saying I'm not a big fan of trellising. It's not that I'm not a big fan of trellising. Fair enough. It's rectangular and right angular and perpendicular, and my dogs are barking, and the place is going to be Jesus. But essentially, the reality is that when the foliage covers over the trellising and the timber isn't, you know, it's not like 6-inch by 6-inch timber we're talking here, moisture gets in, the foliage doesn't allow the water to evaporate. And what you find is that the timber rots. Now, the problem from a clematis point of view is that, generally speaking, they're self-clinging or self-climbing. So they send out a shoot, and then a little, you know, whippet sticks out the side, and he wraps himself around the timber like it's almost like a corkscrew, you know. It's exactly like a corkscrew, in fact. And then once it gets a grip of that, it sends out another shoot, and up they go. So if you wish to replace the trellising, the reality is one needs to chop the clematis down or break a fair amount of the clematis in order to get it to, and in which case, because you've removed all the timber for which it was wrapped around, it needs to start from scratch again. So the galvanized wire doesn't rust, the timber concreted in is a It's a fairly sturdy piece of kit. It just makes you think. The holly on the flip side of it. Now, this is one, I suppose, in my opinion, between everybody going, I want to grow vegetables in my attic and I want to grow vegetables in my gutters and I want to grow vegetables in my socks. People are growing fruit and veg everywhere. What seems to be happening between that and the low maintenance, give me a low maintenance garden, concrete, pave in my house. I want you to pave in my back garden. I want you to pave in my granny. I don't have to cut the grass. Brilliant. Okay. Holly's got a bit of a rap, which is fine. No, it's not really. Because what's going to happen now in a couple of weeks is that all the birds are going to go on their summer holidays. From Ireland, anyway. Going to head somewhere nice like Barbados or the Dominican Republic, get a bit of a suntan, come back around Paddy's Day, have a pint, chill out, you know, that kind of stuff. And for those who hang around, we put out bird feeders, which is a little bit kind of, you know, I won't give you what you really want. I won't give you a pint of Guinness, but I'll give you a pint of Murphy's. Or I won't give you a pint of Guinness, I'll give you a pint of Beamish. If you're into bird feed, there's a slight difference. That's all I'm saying. If you're into Guinness, there's definitely a bit of a difference. There's like the Barry's tea, and that's a whole different argument. All of a sudden, we brought in the Cork crowd into this one. Either or, what I'd be saying is, look, take a gander at it. There is a point where it's important that you pick a male and a female, or one, because the male doesn't produce berries. See? This is what it comes back to, folks. In all honesty, the male does nothing. He's a useless git, right? The male holly is useless apart from pollinating the female. And guess what the plant boys did? They invented one that was dioecious, because essentially what you have is you've got male parts on one, female parts on the other. What did they do? They decided to invent a plant that had both male and female plant parts on it. So if you do buy a male holly, you're not going to produce berries. And as a result of that, because he's rendered useless, because he's of no use to anybody whatsoever anymore, people don't seem to be asking for them. They don't seem to be asking for them. So there's an overpopulation now of female hollies. Tractor's going on in the background. This place is going berserk. To my images, I have my, I've two of them up there that are kind of loosely tied in together. One of them is the horse chestnut leaf, or the leaf of the horse chestnut. And the second one is it's leaves on the ground. And that is exactly it, folks. We're on that verge where again, it goes back to the hollies because they're evergreen. It goes back to the ilex, goes back to the berries. It goes back to the reason why I'll constantly say over and over again, look, it's not that it doesn't get, it's not that it gets less busier around the winter time. It doesn't. The reality is there's probably more to do than you realise between tree planting season, hedge planting season. The fact that I'd hope, you know, for those who are into making their own wreaths, those who want to give that little bit of extra shelter and a little bit of cover to the birds that are outside, you got the holly trees there. You know, here's a quick one. How many people actually have a climbing plant or a holly in their garden? Just curiosity kill the cat, you know, it's food for thought. Just food for thought. The next one after that, actually, here's another one that you should be cracking on with, is the bulbs. And that was the first daffodil bulb that I've seen. I spotted it there about 2 weeks ago. It was up in one of the nurseries, taking a gander around. Bags of them. I'll be buying a few bags here for myself if anybody's interested. But essentially, if you click the link that I have on the blog to do with the bulbs and you look at the photographs that I have there, very, very simply, really simply, all I did was I put the spade in, I rolled back a couple of lengths of turf, dug out a bit of soil, made a little bit of a fine tilt down it, and poured, and I mean poured, like pouring a bag of peas into a pot. Of course, they wouldn't be in a bag, they'd be homegrown, but you get what I'm saying. And quick one while I'm on that subject, because generally speaking, I find this question will actually come up quite seasonally, and it is there a right way to plant a bulb? As in, you know, if I don't put them facing north or if I don't... No. There's an equation called geotropism. And geotropism essentially is that you can plant a bulb any way you like, sideways, upside down, back to front, it doesn't matter. And the head of it will go north and the bottom of it will go south at all times. Geotropism, folks. That's what it's called. Pretty easy. The bird feeder that you see up there, we did that for a gentleman called Dave Moore. And Dave DJs with 98 FM, really nice guy. He's an odd sense of humour, so be warned if you wish to go say hello. He's at Dave98 FM. How logic. Sheesh. Yeah, there's that. Would say that took I'd say that took a while, Dave, huh? I think I'd call myself Dave 90. Okay, yeah, I'm going to leave it there for the moment, folks, and I'm going to go straight into this bit of an interview I did with Shauna Coronado. We did this on Tuesday, pre-recorded, as I mentioned, the sound previous, all right, so it won't be your speakers that are going wonky, it's actually just a recording side of it. But I have to say, Shauna is an absolute lady, and take a listen, see how we get on.
The range of gardening temperatures, for example, that I have are quite more than you. And so, therefore, I can grow less than you can as from a variety perspective. The advantage is, for instance, certain vegetables like tomatoes do very, very well where I'm at because tomatoes love sun and heat. And so I'm able to grow, you know, chemical-free, organic style of vegetables in my front lawn and do it really successfully.
Okay, so but the big one, Sean, is like, I mean, over here at this moment in time, like we're coming into obviously October. You are in the States as well. I'm fully aware of that. There's mm-hmm. not that much of a time difference, but I mean, the big one for me is now we've got past the point of, let's say, I grow my basil inside. I've got my onions have just been cropped. My potatoes have just been cropped. On the flip side of it, my rainwater harvesting butts are full to the brim. What are you growing at this moment in time? Because you do most of yours in your front garden. And the second thing is, not only are what are you growing, but you were saying there about the temperatures. How do you work with that water kind of conservation? Or is it an issue where you are? Or how does it all go together?
It is an issue where I am. Water conservation. Okay, I live near one of the largest water sources in the United States, which would be Lake Michigan. And that while that's a lovely thing, we as gardeners have to garden every day regularly. So some cities and suburbs of Chicago, for instance, collect their water from that lake, and they think it's just everlasting and free. However, a lot of studies have been done in the United States all over, and right now, in over a third of the United States, there are drought conditions. So that means that everyone here really needs to be focused on saving water, conserving water, and being more aware. So one of the things I did pull out my front lawn. So I have no grass in my front lawn. Instead, I have vegetable garden. And I dug a giant pit, and we installed a rainwater cistern that's a 500-gallon rainwater cistern, and it collects rain off of my roof. So it's very cool.
But I gather then, obviously, if you've got a 500, what, you didn't say 500 liters, you said 500 gallons?
Yes, 500 gallons. So a gallon is like 2 liters? Is it, you know, forgive me.
Yeah, so 5 liters, I think, yeah.
So it's definitely a large contained water system. And I also have 5 rain barrels on my home. Now, I have to tell you, that might be more common out west where it is even a hotter climate than here. I am an exception to the rule of rain barrels. Most people have 1 or 2 rain barrels. But I have quite a large garden for my property. So I spend a lot of time watering. And I think it's really important if I can do it without paying. We have to pay for water here in the United States. So I do not want to pay for city water and use our aquifer. Instead, I want to use that rainwater.
Quick one for you before we go, Shauna. They're talking about bringing a rainwater. Sorry, I was going to say a rainwater tax into Ireland, which kind of wouldn't surprise me. But they're talking about bringing a tax into Ireland on domestic water usage. What are your thoughts on how does it work over in the States? How does it work well? You know, is it a big deal? Is it a bad thing?
It's for us, it's not a big deal because we pay for our electricity, we pay for our gas, we pay for our water. It's just one of the other bills that you pay for. And the water bill is, I mean, typically low here in this region where I live. However, I mean, if you're out west, if you live in California, the water tax or the water bill would be extreme and would be hundreds of dollars. So then it would really encourage people to use a rain barrel. And certainly that's my number one goal, is to get people thinking about that. You know, if we want to say something controversial here, Peter, I don't think people will be fighting wars about oil in the future. I think it's going to be about water. And you happen to be very lucky and fortunate to live in one of the countries that still has an abundance of water.
And a huge thanks to Shauna. As always, she'll be coming up later again in the next couple of weeks. My guest, however, next Thursday is another lady of the horticultural world, Miss Jane Powers. I look forward to talking to her over the weekend, and we should have an interim podcast intro link for you there up on iTunes midweek. Straight into my oddity section, however, I've got a couple of doozies for you and a couple of whoppers. This one, first up, is from the amazing René Adolphe Bejesus Bigorra. René, you did ask for me best Irish accent, Turalura, there you are. René gave me a couple of photographs, two of which I put up on the blog, and essentially, the crux of it is that outer back garden, which is brimmed with sunflowers. You should take a look at these photographs. They're amazing, like nothing you've ever seen before in Ireland anyway. But the sunflowers seem to follow her. It's like a CSI botanical, a CSI horticulture. I wonder, has anybody got a theory on that one? There's another one up there. I like this link. It's actually a travel guide to Dublin, which for me, it's unusual to read these because I live here, obviously, and I've got my own agenda on what I'd really like to do. And I got this from the really cool people over at Irish Fireside. I love their blog. They're also up for nomination for the podcast at the Irish Web Awards. Well done, folks. Straight into my next one. This was from AJ LeCrack. What a great name. Hello, Mr. LeCrack. And it's basically, yeah, Dublin is bidding to become the World Design Capital for 2014. They're launching that on Tuesday the 28th. Has that passed? I think it has. But yeah, it was launched on Tuesday the 28th. I think it's nice. I like the article, actually. It was a nice, inspirational story. What wasn't so inspirational was the story in the Irish Times by Genevieve Carberry and Stephen Maguire. I got this one from Susie, who runs mamampoulet.com. I've put a link up there to Susie's blog and a post that I actually liked. But this one was a bit... Sorry, but it was a bit stupid, because essentially what happened was some Egypts decided to release 5,000 mink from a farm. Either or, whether I agree or disagree, I'm not saying a strongly worded letter is the alternate, but I know this is a very much welcome to Egyptsville from whoever decided to do that one. There's mixed responses over on boards.ie. Go take a read. I don't think I'm on my own, essentially, is the answer. The Community Recycling Network to Happier Notes. I got this one from the guys at the Rediscovery Centre based in Ballymun, and essentially they have a gig on for one day, which is preventing waste and strengthening communities. Now, anything with the word strengthening communities in it and also preventing waste, I would like to go to that one. I hopefully will get there. I'd like to do this one, the next one, but I won't be able to do it. It is a course called Ancient Places and Sacred Sites. Obviously, that's of Ireland. It's 80 quid for 10 weeks. 80 quid for 10 weeks. The problem is, for me, is that it takes place from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. on a Monday. That's the only problem. But it's down at Kilbarrack near Brian Green. Brian Green's, no, Baldoyle is where Brian is. But it's down at Kilbarrack direction. If you have the time, it is something that I would highly recommend. I'd be interested to see if anybody goes to it or gets anything out of it. I'd say they will, funnily enough. I mentioned this last year, it's back again, it's National Trails Day. This is an absolute whopper for the moms. You want to get rid of Jimmy and the kids? Give them a fiver for ice cream. Make sure they all got woolly hats on. And good luck to you. Talk to you later. You better bring the kids out. And by the way, it's free. Free, free, free. Cost you nothing. Into the great outdoors. Please let me know how you get on if you are heading out there. The Haut Peninsula Heritage Society, I probably owe Dermot O'Cossack a bit of an apology on this one. I was supposed to publish this last week. I lost a great big batch of my emails. And essentially, I forgot to publish these on last week's podcast. So Dermot's talk on the 28th, which was also Tuesday, is obviously gone. But there are two more coming up. One is from Michael Hurley and one is from the amazing Dermot Quinn. They have two talks. It's October 26th and 23rd, respectively. I particularly like the one on the aspects of history of Baldoyle and Haut, and that is definitely Brian Green country. And to my Anne Finally section, this picture came in from at MushyP007. And that is it, folks. That is all I have time for today. My thanks, as always, to you for listening. My thanks to the gentlemen and ladies at Repack Recycling. Fairness, they are trying to encourage you to do your little bit more around the office and the home. Go take a look at the links. There's a month of it. It's the entire of October and we're almost there. They launched on just Wednesday gone. You'll find me, as always, on info@donniganlandscape.com. That's email, www.donniganlandscape.com, and hit the blog. I'm at Donegan Gardens on Twitter. For me, as always, have a great weekend, folks, in the great outdoors. Do let me know how you get on. Enjoy. Goodbye.